The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are listening to a Rattledge Broadcasting premiere podcast, Damn You Hollywood. And here's your host. You know, it's hot out here for a pimp, but if you need a bitch to get smacked up, Robert Winfrey will whoop that trick. Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Winfrey. Yay!
Was a like the worst mashup you could find that would be playing at a house party you'd attend.
Okay, I can go again. Hang on. You can
find I want to hear this one.
You can find Robert Winfrey in St. Louis. where he just, I can't even finish the line. Just the idea.
I wanted you to try, Mark. I really did, but
no, we're good.
Something
Robert
so
Winfrey is
that
here. Robert Winfrey is here. Mark to make him say, na 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 na. Robert Winfrey.
Well, you got there, sort of. Well, look, it was a good effort. There's a germ of an idea there. Let's just keep workshopping it, and we'll be back in a week.
If I contribute nothing to this world, nothing at all, including having brought kids into it, it is to give Robert Winfrey 1% of ghetto culture. Just ghetto him up 1%. I want Robert Winfrey just one day, just like he's like watching a fight. He's doing his coverage. He's all being Robert Winfrey Mormon about it. He's just all, you know, if it ain't white, it ain't right. And then, you know, like
that is.
This is an impressive knockout or something.
I don't think you could do that. I don't think you could get someone as white as Robert is.
And Robert just blurts out, "Whoop that trick!" Oh shit! God damn it, Mark. Then I can rest. Then I can rest.
Tell you what, when I have to cover the inevitable, assuming I do, it seems inevitable. There's going to be clashes between Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes, and that's the chant that Trick Williams gets.
Yes.
I will try and reference it at least once if I ever cover any of their matches. Will that make you happy?
You have no idea how happy. Hey, Robert, what are we doing tonight?
Tonight we're discussing the Tumblr ramblings of a 13-year-old. I'm sorry. I mean, we're talking about Lisa Frankenstein. You've heard
Tumblr
Alexis
rantings, Stein. Diablo Cody script, tomato, tomato.
I assume the phrase script is used loosely. I retroactively resent Juno just because it gave us more Diablo Cody, and she's just not good.
I like Juno. Juno was good.
Gave us more Diablo. That was her debut. It couldn't give us more Diablo Cody because that was the first to give us Diablo Cody.
Yeah, no. But
give us
if
less
that had,
Diablo Cody, it had to give us that, more Diablo Cody because it was the first.
Yeah. Look, the point being, had it failed, we would have no more Diablo Cody. Instead, it succeeded, and we have more. And I resent its success because it gave us more.
Lisa Frankenstein is a 2024 American comedy horror film directed by Zelda Williams, the daughter of Robin Williams, a comedy legend. In her feature-length directorial debut, written by the aforementioned Diablo Cody, the film stars Catherine Newton, Cole Sprouse, Lisa Soberano, Henry Eikenberry, Joe Crest, and Carla Gugino. Taking place in the same fictional universe as Jennifer's Body, its plot follows a misunderstood teenage goth girl who reanimates a Victorian era corpse and works to make him into the man of her dreams. It was released in the U.S. by Focus Features February 9th, 2024. It received generally mixed reviews from critics. And boy, when we get to the money, you should see how, like, it is amazing. It's like, look, it's only a $13 million budget. It's gonna, you know, we got to make money on this thing. And it's like, holy cow, how are we not making money on this? Fantastic.
I'm sure they'll find a way, starting with not starting with being restricted in oh so many countries.
Your brother in with a hot take. New record, 5 minutes in, and part of Robert's soul already died.
That is not the record.
You might even say, I whooped that trick. Arr. All right.
I mean, you could say it, but you'd be wrong.
I don't even know where to begin with this.
Well,
you know, we were screwing around before the show started tonight, so we didn't decide. We never really established what we're doing for like an intro topic.
It's like we started screwing around. We found out that one of our co-hosts is in the freaking hospital, and then everything just got massively derailed, and we hit the start button.
Occasionally, bad news comes through right before you go live, and it does mess with things. So we can talk for a few minutes about how Diablo Cody is like second, if not for George Lucas, she would be cinema's greatest monster.
For those of you who don't know who Diablo Cody is or what she's done, she wrote Juno.
Won an Oscar for Juno.
She did. She wrote Jennifer's Body.
Terrible.
Wrote and produced Young Adult. Wrote Paradise.
Also not good.
She has an uncredited writing. She has an uncredited writing credit on Evil Dead. She's written and produced Ricky and the Flash, Tully, and now Lisa Frankenstein. Her television credits are
not a lot of good there.
Are United States of Tara, Children's Hospital, and One Mississippi. So I don't, you know, again, she's won a bunch of awards. She won a bunch in 2007.
She won a lot for Juno, which I don't think was undeserved.
She won a couple for Young Adult. And then she won for Jagged Little Pill, Outstanding Critics Circle Award, and a Tony Award for Best Book of a Musical. So, you know, she comes with some degree of fanfare here. What's your impression of Diablo Cody, Alexis?
Again, I haven't seen a lot of her movies. I did see Juno. I like Juno, and I was willing to accept that, yeah, she did deserve the award, the Oscar for that. I think it says a lot that more attention, I remember more attention was drawn on the outfit she was wearing rather than the award she won, because she was apparently wearing like a leopard print dress that she'd gotten from a thrift store or something. So, really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm really in the fact that people made a big deal about this. Like, it's Hollywood. People wear stupid shit all the time.
Well, hang on, Mark. People wear stupid shit they pay way too much for.
Okay. So the problem wasn't that she wore stupid shit. The problem is she wore poor people's stupid shit.
Yes.
It was. It was a weird looking, but I don't think anyone had ever worn something from a thrift. Again, why are we talking? Why the fuck are we talking about this?
Had the same thing happened, you know, last year or the year before, we would have had like a two news cycles worth of Oscar winning writer unable to afford real gown has to shop at thrift store. Back then, when this actually happened, you know, almost 20 years ago, it was kind of a joke. Nowadays it would be a joke, but a joke that you'd spin up social media nonsense over for, again, about 3.5 days.
There was a big thing also about Diablo Cody kind of coming from overnight. Wasn't she like a stripper or something before?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, it was a very rags to riches kind of story, which admittedly Hollywood cannot get enough of. And there is something admirable about someone who can come out of the woodwork like that and write something. Because whether or not you like Juno, the dialogue in that, the way the script was written, was really unique and very strong. I'll admit some of the forced slang she came up with. I still remember one of the characters going, "Honest to blog." And I remember someone going, "That is so okay. Never catch."
Here's what I want to read to you guys. In March of 2003, Cody started an adult blog called The Pussy Ranch, using a pen name invented while speeding through Cody, Wyoming, listening to the song El Diablo by Arcadia. Oh, fantastic. How usual suspects of her. On a whim, Cody signed up for an amateur night at a Minneapolis strip club called the Skyway Lounge. Having enjoyed the experience, because who wouldn't, and seeing reader interest, she eventually quit her day job to become a full-time stripper. God, it's the American dream. Cody also spent time working peep shows at Sex World, a Minneapolis adult novelty and DVD store. While still stripping, Cody began writing for City Pages, an alternative Twin Cities weekly newspaper. She left City Pages just before it changed editorial hands and has since written for the now-defunct Jane magazine. In December 2007, Cody began writing a column for the magazine Entertainment Weekly. Yeah. This woman's never...
I'm surprised that the very brief but intense affair you had with her, Mark, did not make her Wikipedia entry. She sounds right up your alley.
She really does sound like a girl I would date and possibly marry. And then
very
get
much so. So what really attracted me, because I believe I was the one who shared this with on the network chat and said, please tell me we can review this. Not only did I think the movie looked fun, but what piqued my interest was this is the feature-length directorial debut of Zelda Williams. Now, I do have it here. Before this, she had done, it looks like, two short films, but she was mostly known for doing music videos, specifically for the pop star JoJo.
Oh, interesting.
Good friends. So, but yeah, this was something that I thought was really interesting and a little bit of a spoiler for the craft review. I will say, whatever your issues, anyone's issues may be with this movie, the direction is not one of them. And I greatly look forward to seeing what she can do in the future.
Yeah, she has a fairly decent deft hand at swinging a camera around. She wrote, directed, and produced and acted in a movie in 2018 called Shrimp, which I can't imagine anyone saw. Shrimp is a 2018 short comedy drama film written and directed by Zelda Williams, starring Connor Leslie, Paulina Singer, and Williams as a dominatrix. Why isn't anyone telling me about these movies? In a Los Angeles BDSM den.
You're an adult. We assume you know how the internet works.
The internet is a very big place, my friend. The title of the film is a reference to the term given to a dominatrix's male clients. Oh, you learn something new every day. I have to check that out. All right. So, yeah. Robert, you were not looking forward to this, which I was surprised by, because I thought when we were talking about doing this, you had some interest. And then you and I talked about it during Argyle, and you were like, I'm dreading this. I'm like, why? What's the issue?
Because I saw
it. I was like,
trailer.
You were dreading this more than Argyle?
I actually had hope for Argyle until I saw it. Like, yeah. That movie slowly ground down my potential hype. This I finally saw. I agreed to do it, and I'm not saying I regret that, but I'm down for a riff for riffing on Frankenstein. That's not the end of the world.
Riffing on Frankenstein and Lisa Frank.
And yeah, you'd mentioned it again, Zelda Williams, like, all right, I'll potentially take it. Then I saw the trailer and went, oh no.
So they've been hyping up this movie for a couple of months now. My kids have seen the trailer a bunch of times, and each time they would pull my sleeve and go.
Okay, hang on. You are the only one who saw I saw a trailer for this like 2 weeks ago. They spent nothing marketing this. Absolutely
nothing. Depends on which
movie. I saw quite a few trailers.
It depends on which movies you saw. If you saw some indie stuff like I did over the last couple of months, you got the trailer for this. And I can tell you, I dragged my kids to a bunch of different things, so they saw the trailer multiple times. So it showed up in, it had to have showed up in things that I saw, brought them to, and I brought them to some fairly mainstream stuff. Each time they saw it, they would pull my shirt and go, Dad, are we going to see Lisa Frankenstein? I'm like, yes, absolutely. I'm not going to make Robert watch this, but I will absolutely take you to see it. And so, you know, Jonas, I think just based on aesthetic, strictly based on aesthetic, having never seen the movie, was like, oh, this feels like the Edward Scissorhands of our time. And I think what he was trying to go for, sparing at least a minute discussion, was movies that are kind of targeted directly at like the youth goth culture,
the you know, Hot Topic crowd.
Yeah, the hot. Yeah. Yeah, I fucking hate that though. Like, you know, having grown up in the actual goth culture, you know, going out to clubs, listening to Skinny Puppy, and all that.
I find it
like wildly irritating that it gets reduced to Hot Topic. As if the rest of the fucking culture doesn't matter.
Okay, let me rephrase. Okay, I'm not using it as saying like all the kids who go to Hot Topic, especially since Hot Topic nowadays is really pushing more for the common demographic, but I am going to use it as a term for basically I'm saying I know it's not the appropriate term, but you know what I mean by it. So we're going to go ahead and use it until someone can come up with a better term.
Let me tell you real quick. So years ago, I have a cousin. My cousin currently goes by the name Mercy. She's an EDM artist. She's working out of Europe. Been in a bunch of movies. Had a small part in, I think, The Matrix Reloaded and some other stuff. My cousin Mercy, when I knew her as a child, she was just like, Cousin Mark. We were very close. I was living in Los Angeles at the time. She was still in like elementary school, I think. She's like, I'm goth. And I'm like, oh, are you now? And she's like, I'm goth. I listen to Korn and Rob Zombie. And then I pushed her into traffic.
That was the right thing to do.
I understand. That's parenting.
And then I hope she wrote a song about it.
If she remembers the incident, sure.
But you never forget the first time you get pushed into traffic.
Nope. Stays with you
forever. Wait, was it the first time she got pushed into traffic?
It wouldn't be the last. However,
they get less and less memorable as you go on, but that first one that sticks with you.
Years later, she was dropping names like Alien Sex Fiend and stuff, and I'm like, all right, at least now you're starting to know some of the decent bands. But it rubs me the wrong way because, like, and this is the point that I was trying to get to, I don't mind films that speak to the kids that are a little weird. You know, I don't mind the films that speak to the kids that like to dress in black and do, you know, black eye makeup and have some quasi obsessions with, you know, the morbid, the macabre. That's fine. Make art for them too. They all count. Yeah, you're raising your hand. Like, you know, that's why I hate the term, like, and I'm not coming after you necessarily. You're not the first person to throw that out there, but it's like we talk about how when you reduce black people down to a single cultural stereotype, or you say you don't create characters that are black that are negative because these are long-suffering people, that demeans black people as a whole. You demean the whole fucking culture when you just throw Hot Topic out there. It's a store that sells, you know, stuff. It's not a good label for the culture.
Then let's have a goal here. Before we wrap up tonight's discussion, let's see if we can come up with a new term for that other than the Hot Topic culture.
No. Stop. Let me settle this.
Yeah.
I object to this movie being about a goth girl. She's not
okay.
Goth.
But that's a crafting that I actually want to talk about.
Hang on. So to Alexis's point, what we have is the Hot Topic variation of goth being presented here, rather than actual goth.
Didn't South Park do an episode about this?
Yes, but that probably. But that was focused. It's like they were turning them into vampires, and at the end, yeah, they did kind of a gothy, you know, to burn down the Hot Topic song. I think it was by the Sisters of Fucking Mercy.
But like, this is kind of the point. Like, there's a there's the real goth culture, and then there's the commercialized surface level Hot Topic version of it, and that's what we've got here. That's this character.
They use that because this movie was not bold enough to say we are solely for goth culture. They wanted to make sure that it appealed to a wider audience.
I don't mind. I'm
not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying, yeah, from a studio standpoint, that's actually a smart thing to do so you can get more people interested in the movie.
Right. So, you know, so when Joni says,
how did that play out, Ollie?
So this was the Edward Scissorhands of our era. What he's trying to say in his own almost 10-year-old way is, this is a movie aimed at those kinds of kids that are on the little weird side, you know, that are, you know, they enjoy the macabre.
I believe dad calls us warped.
You know, it's so funny. So
this is weird science by way of Tim Burton's non-union Mexican equivalent.
Yeah. You cut me off in the lane and sped ahead of me. That's where I was going with this. I was like, I think he had interesting verbiage, but I don't know how accurate it is because the movie in and of itself is more weird science, but it's very weird science for the modern generation. I'm having a conversation recently. I don't remember which podcast, but I'm fairly certain Robert was there. Might have been Disenchantment. We're talking about how, like, there's studies now about kids being kind of weirdly asexual. Well, they don't like sex in their media. They don't like sex in their television, their movies. They're okay with sort of light romance, but anything that resembles actual, like, you know, sex and anything resembling real moments, they tend to reject and they don't want it there. And this movie This movie, I feel like, was like definitely going after that audience with that in mind.
Yeah, I think it was when we talked about Disenchantment. How you brought that up, like, I understand wanting to get away from some of the like very gross stuff that was done in the 80s
and some of the 90s.
Yeah,
like American. Like, remember we had one last, you know, hurrah with the American Pie movies, you know, and
yeah,
like Van Wilder and all that.
I do think that we did get a little over sexualized, and I think this is the new generation saying we need to get a little more grounded.
I think the pendulum is going way too far the other way.
Well, I think the problem is that like everyone realized again, like mid to late 90s, everyone kind of paused, looked around, and went, "Oh no, oh my! There, look at all this. We're just putting it all out there, huh?" And we all kind of
went, teen sex comedy had taken over.
And so there was kind of a concerted effort to, you know what, let's reel this back in a little bit. Yeah, let's just pull it back. And the pendulum's overcorrected. And now part of what we've got is a generation that was raised on the overreaction to being overly sexualized. And that's kind of where that cultural thing comes from. And it's a shame. I mean, I don't want graphic sex in movies, personally. But
have you seen Poor Things yet?
You know what I was thinking about? Actually, No Hard Feelings. Because I didn't talk enough about this. We didn't review it. I think I brought it up the weekend during the money that it came out during another movie review. And then I completely forgot about it during any of the top 10s I discussed on either this or any other show.
Yep.
But No Hard Feelings was that like desperate attempt to reignite a flame in a world soundly rejecting the raunchy sex comedy to generate interest in that sort of thing again. And I remember thinking about that movie. It's like, nice try, but this wasn't a raunchy sex comedy. There was a lot of, I don't want to get into it. There was a lot about No Hard Feelings that was disappointing in that you promised me Porky's and you gave me something. You gave me like, you know, a meaningful meditation on relationships and aging and all this other stuff. And it's like, that's fine. I'm, you know, you made a halfway decent movie with that. But boy, is that not what you promised me.
I think the last attempt at something, you know, irreverent in that respect was probably Bad Boys. Is that what it's called? Oh, I can't remember.
That's the Will Smith, Martin Lawrence.
No. There's something similar. It's like about the
Foul Mouth 12-year-old. You're talking about Superbad.
No, there was one after that.
Oh, the one with the little kids.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I can't remember what that but was called.
It was like in the wake of Superbad. It was a few years after that.
Yeah.
I remember the trailer because the kids find the sex swing in the bedroom and they think it's just a swing and they're playing around on it.
Right.
Yeah, and again, I want to say it was, I know it wasn't Bad Boys because that's the terrible, terrible franchise, but it was something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the last gasp at kind of trying to revive that genre.
So we've referenced Weird Science a few times. I just want to end on this. So Weird Science is about two nerdy guys. They can't
good
get
boys.
Thank
you. Good boys.
Very good, Alexis. They speaking of good boys, you have Anthony Michael Hall and some dude. And they can't get laid and they're being bullied by Bill Paxton and it's just the whole thing. You know,
Bill Paxton, notorious bully.
Yes. And so when you can't get a girl to sleep with you, you build one. I think that's the motto here, the lesson light.
More or less.
Yeah. And so they grab a Barbie doll, they do a bunch of hoodoo voodoo, they put bras on their heads, there's lightning, we get clips of Frankenstein. And they bring to life, I can't remember the actress's name, but she was a hot actress at the time. And so she befriends these kids, she gets them into parties, she gets them into trouble. It's a whole thing. She bullies the bully, and they, you know, and at the end of the day, they have confidence, they have vim, they have vivor, and they are able to get the girls, and all is well.
The actress was Kelly LeBrock for the record.
The hot Kelly LeBrock. Point being, you know, as a riff on Weird Science, this is, I kind of like the idea that this is sort of Weird Science for the asexual goth generation. It's like, you know, here's some light romance for you. Here's, you know, you can't, you know, all guys are terrible. So we'll build a guy that's actually honorable and decent and chivalrous because God knows none of them exist.
By reviving one from the early 1900s.
That's how far back. I like the fact that that's the like how far you back you have to go to fight a decent dude.
And for the love of all that's holy, don't let him speak.
Right. Look, he's just there to chop off wieners. We don't need him to talk. So with that said, I like Lisa Frankenstein as sort of a riff on that. You know, we'll talk in just a few seconds about where it goes wrong here and there. But for the most part, I think as an elevator pitch, like, what about Weird Science, but for like the Me Too gothy asexual generation? Do those people watch movies or just TikTok? I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out. Let's put it out there.
Look, it's not going to cost us all that much. Let's take a flyer. Let's see if they will watch a movie. And well, it turns out, no, they won't. But
we'll throw it into an art house studio and see if we can trick people into thinking this is art. All right. Go ahead, Robert. Plot. So it's just as it is.
The plot of this thing is fairly straightforward. We open with, I would argue, one of the stronger parts of the entire movie with a nice little animated story about the man who's going to be revived's life.
And paying homage to the classic Frankenstein, he is only referred to as the creature in the credits. Creature.
So since we're interrupting already, Mike's daughter was pissed about that. I mean, like, I took her to Bahama Breeze after for some nice churrasco and, you know, Caribbean food, and she was like, flip the fucking table angry. The whole ride from the time we got out of the theater to all the way at the end of our Bahama Breeze dinner, she was like, why is he just the creature? Why doesn't he have a name? She's like protesting. She's like lighting her bra on fire. She was mad, I tell you.
Justice for the creature.
So like, he has a name. And so she's like, quoting the Crucible. I didn't understand what was her problem. Thank you. Everyone got my English literature joke. But yeah.
English literature, Daniel Day-Lewis. Take your pick.
Yeah.
Hey, we will not forget that was written by Arthur Miller.
No, we will not. Let's ascend here, people. Let's elevate the conversation. She was not thrilled that the creature didn't have a name. And I had to spend a good 5 to 10 minutes satiating my child by going on IMDb trying to find this fucking character's name. And I'm like, it's just the creature. She was like, okay, but what about this scene? She's doing like Easter egg hunts. She's like, but what about this scene? What about when he put on the tombstone? What about this? I'm like, what about you eat your fucking dinner before I hit the shit out of you? I'm gonna push you into traffic along with your cousin.
The tombstone is actually very cleverly, the part with his name has been just completely erased from time and weather and stuff.
Yeah, good. Tell my daughter that.
Well, again, it's an homage to the classic Boris Karloff movie. That character didn't have a name. Well, yeah, hell, they didn't give him a name in the book. It was just the creature.
Just as a side, can I tell you how much that annoys me that creature is referred to as Frankenstein and not Frankenstein's monster as it should be, and that's how dumb we are as a culture.
Oh my God.
I'm with you. It bothers me, but hang on. In fairness, the creature does call itself Adam in the original story.
Moving on.
Yeah, and they tried to use that in that Aaron Eckhart Frankenstein movie, and we will never speak of that again.
Moving on.
It's like, yeah, that movie gets thrown in there with the shortcut.
It does. It's one of the few people who's actually seen it. So... We open with a brief story about his life. He gets his heart broken. He dies tragically. He's buried in the bachelor's plot where all the unmarried, lonely men go to die. And Mark and I have our reservations already. Actually, no. You have progeny. I'm there alone at the moment.
No, I have a plot picked out just next to yours. So we can be together.
Robert, he's going to be annoying you in the afterlife. You know that's coming.
In the afterlife, we're doing rap music, Robert. All right, go ahead.
No, the afterlife is where I get to. I'm the one annoying you in the afterlife, and I'll just leave it at that. You're the one desperately going, leave me alone. I appreciated my life of debauchery, and I'm trying
to express.
This
movie is 20 minutes long, and this plot synopsis is going to be 2 hours by the time we're done with it.
I just now know that after you.
Oh my God!
I need to get a Ouija board and say, like, so who's annoying who?
You at the moment. Go, Robert.
So again, we get a bit of his life, and then we fast forward to 1989, where mopey old Nancy from Stranger Things has moved away from Hawkins, Indiana. Her mother was violently murdered by an axe murderer. And now her dad's remarried to Carla Gugino, and she's got a stepsister named Taffy, and the character's name is Sally. And she's mopey and she's depressed like you would be if you witnessed a homicide.
Sally, her name is Lisa.
Lisa Swallow. Sorry, not Sally.
Where the fuck did Sally come from?
Her last name meshed with Taffy and my brain came up with Sally.
Mustang Sally. Sorry, go ahead.
So she's weird and introverted and a bit of an outcast, and insert every high school coming of age character. This could have been Molly Ringwald. Let's just put it that way. And she and her stepsister is bubbly and a pageant kid and does cheerleading and all that fun stuff. And it's the classic odd couple. Isn't it just grand? And she drags...
Except that Taffy is actually nice to Lisa. Yeah,
I want to talk at length about that when we get done with the plot synopsis. Keep going.
So Taffy drags her to a party where she gets roofied.
Like you do.
And the nerdy guy tries to take advantage of her, and she's like, no, and she runs into the graveyard where she spends long hours reading weird poetry to a statue. There's a big lightning strike. She eventually staggers her way home. And gets somewhat, has a brief issue where she breaks a mirror. And then we find out that Carla Gugino is the wicked stepmother of all wicked stepmothers.
Yeah.
And the upshot here is there, again, big old lightning strike. And that revived our dear creature, who, much like Swamp Thing, wanders in from the cold one night while everyone else is out, breaks through the patio door, chases the girl around. Until he starts messing with a shoe phone, and for some reason this now leads Lisa to
That was the most believable thing about this movie. Oh, you're a man who can't figure out a phone. Let me help you. I can fix you. And we go from there.
2 minutes ago, I was running around in the sprinklers, being chased by you, screaming for help.
Right, but now
the neighbors saying, "Oh, it's just the weird girl. Never mind her."
Yeah, but you seem to be struggling, and as a woman, I feel like I can fix you as a struggling man. So, instant falling in love.
So, they try to clean up the creature, but he's missing a few parts, like you do when you rot in the ground for a better part of a century. And he's missing an ear. He's missing a hand. He's just kind of like, "Help me!" And she goes, "I'm a seamstress. That's not the same as reattaching limbs. Don't you understand?" And he goes, "No, it's 1989. None of us understand anything." And she's still having issues. She's clashing with her stepmother. Her stepmother then tries to have her institutionalized. So the creature bashes her over the head with a sewing machine. Which I imagine was deeply cathartic for you, Mark, to see a malignant narcissist get bashed over the head with a...
I had to keep from cheering, sure.
Look, we all love Carla Gugino, and we still praise her for what we saw from her in Fall of the House of Usher, but yeah, her character, we were all cheering when she got her skull cracked open.
So the creature then cuts off her ear and says, and kind of gestures at Lisa, like, "Hey, come on." So she sews it onto his head.
And all.
And then then sticks him in the malfunctioning tanning bed that shocks him and sort of revitalizes his body a little bit because he comes out looking not quite as dead.
Once again, it's the old I can't remember what they're called, but you put the pads on when someone's like having a heart issue and you shock them.
Defibrillator.
Yeah, it's acting as one of those. That tracked for me.
I was thinking more about that scene from Monster Squad when Dracula revives the monster by hooking the clamps, junk cables up to the bolts in his neck and then having the lightning rod.
We all know that natural electricity revives the dead. Keep going.
So he comes out a little bit better and then like, "Okay, I need a hand." And she goes, "Okay, there's this creepy guy who kind of sort of thought about date raping me. So, She lures him into the woods.
Like you do.
This woman had clearly seen Hellraiser and lures him to his death. His hand gets cut off and the creature then chucks the old fire axe into the back of his skull and gets a new hand. And now he can play the piano and they can sing REO Speedwagon together. And it's just Jim Dandy.
Yes, sir.
It's cute. It was cute.
Anyway, so he's somewhat able to function now. He still can't talk because it's some way because his tongue is basically rotted out. But now this intricate web of lies and deceit and deception is starting to crumble around Lisa. The walls are closing in. And she decides that, okay, this is going to go badly for me. I just don't want to die a virgin. So this guy I've been crushing on, I will go throw myself at him, and this will not go badly at all.
No,
not even noticing that she's indiscreetly friend-zoning the creature while doing this.
Who hasn't committed murder on behalf of a girl they liked and then been friend-zoned? It happens to all of us.
More than you like to admit. There's a support group. So she goes over to his house and is prepared to throw herself bodily at him, only to find that, gasp, he's been sleeping with her stepsister.
Dun, dun, dun.
And everyone do the head turn and dramatic music play as this Spanish telenovela wears on. And the creature shows up and he castrates our friend and almost goes to kill her stepsister. And Lisa stops him, like, no, don't kill her. She's not bad. He then absconds with the appendage and she tries to calm her stepsister down and she then goes and finds the creature. And the creature's like, okay, so among the things that I lost while I was in the grave, yeah, that. So if you could,
flesh does tend to go first.
It really does. So, okay, could you sew this into place and we'll shock me again and then we can finally have sex and it'll be great. And she goes, yeah, all right.
I do love the whole thing where she's just like, well, why don't you say anything? And he literally is looking at her like, hello? Like, it's like, have you not figured this out yet? Sorry, just one of those moments where I swear Cole Sprouse just broke character and was giving the ultimate WTF look.
Might have been an improv line. She was too deep into character as a self-absorbed teenager who doesn't realize that other people can't speak, simply talks over them even when they would. And so, again, they have sex. Then they throw Lisa into the tanning bed, turn it to ultimate bronze mode, burn down the shed that it's in. Because the cops are closing in now, so she's dead, put air quotes around dead. And then later we see that the creature has murdered at least one more person, because now he can speak, so somebody transplanted the tongue into his bot, into his head. And he's reading Mary Shelley poetry while they're trying to help... I'm trying to help Lisa recover while everyone else thinks that they're dead. And this is our happily ever after.
I did like that Lisa was covered head to toe in bandages. Again, Bride of Frankenstein reference. Very nice.
All right. What'd you think of the movie there, Alexis?
This reminded me a lot of those films in the late 80s, early 90s that kids would watch at slumber parties. Movies like My Best Friend is a Vampire, My Boyfriend's Back, Tammy and the T-Rex, things like that. I feel that Zelda Williams and Diablo Cody were going for that fun, campy horror comedy that we loved watching late on Saturday nights on HBO and Cinemax after our parents had gone to sleep, kind of a thing. I give a lot of credit to Cole Sprouse as the creature. Again, yeah. He doesn't talk until the very end. There is a real talent to acting without saying any dialogue, to communicating solely through his actions and even his facial features. You can't really act with that until like the third transplant. I think after he gets the hand, all of a sudden, yeah, and then we can see he can start smiling and stuff. So, I'm actually a fan of his. Really loved him on Riverdale before I realized that show was just trying to turn out more pop stars than the Disney Channel, and I stopped watching it.
So after the second season.
Second or third, I can't remember. I don't know. I got out before Veronica sang All That Jazz. But no, I really did like it. Again, it's very fun. It's campy. It feels like a real fun callback to that campiness. And I liked it. I really like Zelda Williams's direction. I agree with you, Robert, about that opening scene with the animation. Something that I know we've talked before about on the show is the concept of how you give exposition and backstory in a unique way that doesn't just bore the hell out of the audience. And doing that with that little minimalist animation style was very creative and very useful. So credit to that. Hell, I even like that they brought that back briefly as the symbolism of what they do after they reattach the dick. Again, thought that was cute. I'm not a huge fan of Catherine Newton's, but maybe that's just because I still haven't forgiven her for Quantumania, because I really think she was the weakest link in that whole movie.
It didn't get, don't blame the actress. They didn't give her a lot to work with.
I blame her not as much as I blame the writer and the directors, but
so you know the joke about how like Star Wars ruined a bunch of actors' careers, and it's an exaggeration. It's a line from Seth MacFarlane to kind of make fun of Star Wars. I think it's more accurate with Marvel, where if you don't see some of these actors in other, you know, real stuff, you just assume they can't act, because the last couple of years these Marvel movies have just not utilized our actors well. And I'm not going to blame the kid
for, well, no, it's not that. It's the fact that Catherine has a very interesting acting style. She does not have an expressive face.
Right. And the thing with Marvel movies, they don't ask you to do anything. They ask you to run from the they ask you to run in the opposite direction of the green screen.
Yeah. And so like, well, so
you,
I had
and then you just have to really hope your running form isn't laughable. And hers is.
Well, I mean, I watched her years before Quantumania on Supernatural, where she was a reoccurring character, but she's very bitter and sarcastic. Essentially, her father is dead, but his body is being used by an angel who's one of the main characters on the show. So he tries to talk to her and have kind of a relationship with her, and she's like, "You are literally not my father, shut the hell up," kind of a thing. So that played well for her. And then, yeah, when I saw her in Quantumania, it was like, sweetie, you can drop this act and show some emotion. But now, after seeing her in a few more projects, I've realized, oh God, that's just the way she acts. That's not the director or anything. That's just, she does not show emotion on her face.
I don't know. But I don't want to cut you in the middle of your craft review, but I enjoyed her performance in this a lot. But to the point that you're making, I don't know if her line delivery is what I enjoyed. There's some physical stuff that she does. Like, there's a couple of things where, it very much felt like an indie woman director thing to let this happen on screen. So, like, the creature grabs her and, like, takes her off screen, and she kind of does one of these, like an antebellum woman. And I was like, okay, that was a nice touch. I like stuff like that. And she does it a couple of times throughout the movie, enough that I noticed it and wanted to talk about it. That's a choice.
Yeah, like the scene where she's like, no, I can't. Not right. Till we bury the body. Yeah, that legit got a loud laugh out
of me. But that's my point. Like, I don't think we're giving her enough credit. I think she made some choices here, and she worked well with the director, and she gave good performance. I think the problem with a lot of modern actors is that if they're not in good hands, they give you shit. But a lot of times it's all that's asked of them. You know, not to hammer on Marvel yet again, but Marvel doesn't ask anything of anybody, or they don't really care about your performance, and they just let you do whatever, because what's important is the vroom, vroom, bang, bang, jup, jup. And I point squarely at Jonathan Majors in the first season of Loki. that fucking bit at the end of Loki, like, I don't know who let that happen, but that was a crime against fucking cinema. Moving on.
If only that was Jonathan Majors' only crime.
But oh my God. Let's go on.
Sorry. Couldn't resist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, again, going back to what I said before we started the
tangent,
the plot, what really got me into wanting to see is what I did want to see, what Zelda Williams brought as a director. And frankly, there was nothing in this film that I watched that I thought was like I said, there was a couple of things I thought was weird, but there was nothing that I thought was weird from the direction. I feel that Williams really brought her A game. I think she did a great job, and I really want to see her do more films. This is a talent that I really want to see more of.
So, damn you, Hollywood. We specialize in loud movies, so it's nice when we get to review something that's quiet. And they're not filling the frame with nonsense. They're not overloading your senses with a bunch of noise that would rival a death metal concert. One of the things I enjoy about independent cinema is that many of these movies are very quiet. They can let scenes just sit. They don't need to fill everything with fucking songs and noise and explosions and a mule getting, you know, kicking a priest in the balls. It's like, it never ends.
And our fourth iteration of sabotage in this film.
Right. So I like that. I like the fact that I could actually just enjoy a feature and focus on some of the other elements of it. I liked, what's her name?
Catherine Newton.
Yeah. I like Catherine Newton's performance in this. We kind of covered that already, but like I said, I liked a lot of her line delivery, a lot of her body movement. She has a lot of chemistry with Cole Sprouse, who I also think did an excellent job with this. Since you didn't mention it, I'm going to go ahead and talk about it now. The actress who plays the sister, Lisa Soberano, who plays Taffy Swallows, she's great. And one of the things I really liked about this is they wrote against type in this movie, in that normally that character is horrible and you want to see them get axe murdered. And they went in the opposite direction, which was, they gave her just enough bitchy teen to where there's some external conflict between her and Lisa, so that, you know, you're interested in what's happening with these characters, but not so much that she's utterly unsympathetic. So when they have, so when they're dragging her around and she's practically catatonic after witnessing a murder, you do kind of feel bad for her, which I think works for the film. And it was a nice, refreshing change. Like, so much of Hollywood writing is brick stupid that in another person's hands, she's just as bad as Carla Gugino, you know? And you only needed one of those characters. You didn't need 50 different bitches in this movie. You only needed one, which is another element of the writing that I really, really liked. Everyone that took an axe deserved it. There's an argument to be made that, okay, well, the boy that she likes probably didn't deserve to be chopped up, but Lisa also didn't order that one either. The creature, sorry, Lily, took it upon himself to avenge her honor and, you know, and chopped his dick off. She didn't go get him, you know, which was nice. It was, you know, it's one of those small elements, but those are the things that I look for in writing in terms of holding up the script and, you know, and keeping things at a place where I can appreciate what's being done here. There are no grating characters in this movie. The dad's a little quasi-autistic, it seems, but he didn't go
over. Mark, you can't expect Diablo Cody to write a legitimate father figure.
Fair.
Actually, J.K. Simmons' character in Juno was a great father figure.
And he didn't hear.
So anyway, as I was saying, he's not unbearable. He's not grating. Nobody is in this movie, which is a nice change. Like, say what you want about Diablo Cody. I don't really want to get into a fist fight with you over it. I'm not in the mood. But in here, I think she didn't underwrite characters. She didn't overwrite characters, which is a common trend in modern Hollywood writing. I think the characterizations were pitch perfect. I had no problem with anyone here. Nobody got on my nerves. In terms of the story, I mean, It's the worst element of this whole thing is that this clocks in at 101 minutes. It's about 11 minutes too long, and it probably didn't need to be a feature-length motion picture. This kind of felt like a short film that got stretched out way too long.
An episode of television.
Yeah. It almost seems like this could have been an episode of like a Twilight Zone or Black Mirror or something. You know, a tanning bed that revives the dead. This needed to be shorter and this needed to be more focused, or they needed to add elements to it to beef it up a bit. The problem is it's way too slight. So the characters are interesting. The color palette's fun. The interactions are good. But when you get to the actual plot of this thing, it's way too little butter over way too much bread. Yeah. That being said, I enjoyed... One of the things I wanted to talk about really quick, because again, you may have picked up on this. I have a bee in my bonnet about the representation of goth culture in modern movie making and television. Irritates me just a little bit. And I like the fact that she wasn't already made goth. It's kind of like that weird science thing where it just sort of gradually happens over time. You know, like it's almost like a lot of these sort of like Pygmalion type movies where you're slowly but surely drawing the girl out of her dorky state into this wonderful butterfly. So, and it's funny, it's natural the way that it happens. Like, I remember the movie Jawbreaker. I don't know if you guys saw this.
Oh yeah, hundreds of times.
The nerdy, skinny blonde, and you know, and it's like two or three scenes later, she's fucking listening to Imperial Teen, and you know, loud. It's like Rose McGowan to like drag her off the car. Like, what are you doing? You know, it seemed a little too quick, a little too unnatural. Here, she's finding stuff to wear in like Taffy's fucking costume closet. You know, she's like, why are you wearing that? I wore that, you know, I wore that for Halloween or some shit, she says. So it's like little by little, she's getting confidence and she's finding stuff to wear. And it feels more natural. It feels like something a kid would actually do. Like, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, my dad had stuff from when he was in the Army. And, you know, my father did not take me to the Army surplus store to buy a camouflage jacket. I stole his, you know, I stole his boots at one point because fuck, he wasn't gonna wear them anymore. It's the kind of thing you do as a kid. You kind of search around your house for things like, oh, this I think would look cool on me. I think you were talking about like your dad's bomber jacket, Alexis.
Yeah, I still have my dad's old bomber jacket, and I stole a lot of shoes from my mother because we wore the same size.
Robert likes to steal his mom's evening gowns. We all have a thing that we do as a kid. I can see Robert like strangle you.
I was gonna say, it's like, God, he's not even reacting. I'm waiting for something.
Oh no, he's reacting on the inside. I can see it. good enough for me. But no, I like that was the approach to it. She just doesn't. She's not like one scene. She's dorky, and then they remove her glasses, and suddenly she's hotsy-totsy, and she has a whole new fucking wardrobe.
Hell, I even love that the first thing she wears when she has this, the creature gives her. He gives her the black dress, and she's like, well, Taffy gave that to me, but it's not really my thing. And he's like, no, you should wear it. It's like, yeah, again, I like that touch.
Yeah, I accidentally found my style after I was, you know, motivated by the creature. And it was a good take on it. So, you know, Lisa Frankenstein, if you've got kids around my age and they're, you know, into A Touch Macabre, they like kind of weirdo stuff, they're into the violent manga, like, sure, this is a fun one. I don't know if you should go to the theater for this, just, which I feel bad saying because I'm a theater advocate, but you know, in 5 minutes when it's on PVOD, yeah, rent it, watch it at home, it'll be a fun watch. Robert?
Well, look, I understand that you feel bad because, much like you, I like the theater, I like the theatrical experience in general.
Mm-hmm. You just like it when no one else is there.
Fewer people, fewer is better.
The point was that, go on.
But I don't think it's unfair to mention that, you know, is this movie enhanced by the theatrical experience or is it not? And this is not a movie enhanced by the theatrical experience.
No.
And again, I don't think it's unfair to say that.
Do you think it would have gotten, when do we get to the reviews, do you think it would have gotten better reviews if it had been released straight to streaming?
By virtue of a smaller pool of reviewers, maybe. But
I mean, here's what I'll tell you. I think it would have had a wider audience if it had gone like straight to Netflix, and Netflix put a decent amount of marketing into it.
Yeah, if you get one of those, if you get the thing where they're like, hey, coming up soon, and we think you'll like this, and save the date.
Do you watch Riverdale? You'd like Lisa Frankenstein. Do you like Supernatural? You'd like Frankenstein. Do you like porn? You'd like Lisa Frankenstein. You know, whatever. What?
You joke, but you know that's coming to Netflix.
I hope. Keep going.
I really don't. But my biggest gripe with... I have two major gripes with this. One, you can tell this... I don't mean this unkindly.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of first-time theatrical directors, you can see what they're kind of aping.
Mm-hmm.
And again... Everybody does this. Everybody who, anything you create, the first giant chunk of what you're doing, you're basically copying other people that you like. And then eventually along the way, you figure out what is you.
All right.
So the fact that this has a very strong, like, again, some of the exterior shots in particular, you watch this and you go, oh, so we're aping Tim Burton here. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. I mean, the fact that their house is all pink. Like,
I thought they were more so aping Henry Selick.
You could be right.
No, but there's a strong Tim Burton element here, like early Tim Burton.
I got very Monkey Bone feels from the first couple of scenes.
Yeah.
I didn't say that was a good thing. No, I just said that was what I was reminded of.
I had repressed so much of that, but... I think you're a little bit
It was specifically the dream she has when she's still semi-drugged. What was the deal, by the way, with that other goth chick who apparently hated her and drugged her?
Because girls of the same sect don't like each other. Keep going, Robert.
If I may quote Vince McMahon in his redirection to commentary, because bitches be crazy.
I'm sure that's going to hold up well in court.
Are you new? Look,
I'm more than happy for Vince McMahon to wind up under the prison, but the fact that that became a running gag in the pro wrestling community for a long time, that like, oh, these women are fighting. Why? Or because there's no real character motivation for it. It's just, oh, you bumped into me and spilled coffee over me. Gah!
Look, not that I want any reaction to this or to keep this going, but to quote a line from Barbie, women don't like women and women don't like women and men don't like women. It's the one thing we can all agree on. Go.
So again, there's very much a director here. Again, first time, I'm just noting it, that you can see the style influences. And if that comes across as like being overly critical, we don't do a lot of first time directors here. It's part of the reason I bring it up. But you can see it, the number of directors who come out with their first movie and have a very strong, independent, personal style to them is very, very, very limited. And in fact, I'd argue it's even more limited the more the movies have become big and a bigger part of the culture.
I don't know if we're going to count Reservoir Dogs as like Tarantino's first movie, but Tarantino was one of those few that had a very distinctive style first time out. And kind of changed. I mean, everyone credits him changing film with Pulp Fiction. There is no Pulp Fiction without Reservoir Dogs, and Reservoir Dogs is kind of what caused the crack in the windshield.
Yeah. I would say him and Robert Rodriguez very much, especially if you have seen El Mariachi. Yeah.
I have. Yes, Alexis. Had reviewed on the network, whole thing.
I don't have all of your shows memorized, Mark.
Write them down. I would like to reference them.
Right. I have enough shit to watch for you for these shows. I don't have all time to also watch all your reviews.
Okay. You know, my ex-girlfriend used to listen to all my stuff. I'm just saying. Keep going, Robert.
Good for her.
So, it's just worth noting that, like, if you want to try and project a little bit, like, you can see the influence that Zelda is drawing from here. And, again, not a bad thing, but a thing worth noting.
By the way, did you guys catch the rainbow suspenders on the creature in the final scene?
Yes. I did.
That was cute.
Nice little callback to Mr. Moore from Mork.
Rest in peace, Mr. Williams. You are greatly missed.
Keep going, Robert.
The biggest drawback, you mentioned it, like the biggest weakness here is the story. It's when they made a big deal about her mother being killed by an axe murderer, like I was waiting for that to come. Like, they play it up enough.
I was waiting for it to matter.
Yeah,
I was waiting to find out that the killer was someone she knew.
Yeah, that was a
I was waiting to find out that that sexy boy she liked was the killer.
That was a gun that never fired. It was really weird for me. Like, it was one of those jarring moments for me where I'm like, this never pays off in any way.
At all.
Is that a fantasy or was that real? I'm like, I don't fucking know. They never reference it again.
I almost half expected her dad to have done it.
Yeah.
Like, there's something that character is
especially considering they make a point of talking about how quickly he moved on to Carla Gugino.
Either that or Carla Gugino could have done it, like, but
it was like a Courtney Love thing where she like gets him to do it for her.
Again, this is the end. That is not how that worked. He just killed himself. Get over it.
Whatever, you killed yourself.
Get over it. He made crappy music. He realized he made crappy music. He didn't want to make crappy music anymore.
Please continue.
So again,
I swear to God, I got the so lucky button triggered. If you don't,
the story is really weak in that respect. There's stuff that just kind of hangs there. I mean, we get one scene with her and her boss at the alteration store,
and it doesn't pay off in any way.
Yeah, like, and
I get that it's to set up how good she is with a needle and thread. So,
but there's a whole thing about like misogyny in that scene that doesn't goes nowhere and does nothing.
Yeah, right. And I mean, if the older guy is going to comment that my teenage employee can't get dates because she's so flat chested, I feel like that's like you can't just leave that hanging there. There's a lot of loose threads.
Yeah, literally.
In terms of narrative and in terms of expectation here. I'm going to echo your sentiment about especially the guy playing the creature, just doing all that acting purely physically, thumbs up. heck of a thing to do. I'm with you that I like, especially the stepsister was written to be okay. Like, she's about what, half stereotype?
No, even less than that. I mean, that character is usually unbearably mean, you know, or way passive aggressive, and she's she kind of
or she's trying to bring her out for another reason. Like, come on, mom said I need to get you more socialized or something like that.
She's as typically twatty as the average girl of that age of that.
Yeah. Type. So, okay. So you're about a fourth the stereotype in the sense that stereotypes are based in reality.
Sure.
And then she goes away from it. You know, she's genuinely trying to be nice. She's genuinely trying to, you know, form a connection with my new stepsister. And it doesn't work well because Lisa's kind of a terrible person. I do think if I have another like sort of gripe here, it would be that. Like, Lisa's not unwatchably terrible.
Yeah.
So you're walking a fine line here where there's an element of tragedy to the character, so they have to not be good. But you also can't have them be, you know, again, so terrible that we don't like watching what they're doing. And they do kind of thread that needle in terms of characterization.
She's able to get away with it because the people that she harms did bad things to her. So it's like she might not be great, but it doesn't matter because the mom is so much worse. She's molested by this nerd.
Ergo, you know, violent murder.
Mm-hmm.
In all fairness, she didn't. I don't think she really thought out how to kill the nerd because she just chops off her hand. She's not the one that kills him. It's the creature who's like, "Oh shit, he's getting away."
Yeah, there's just enough. What is it in court? Plausible deniability.
Yeah, I don't think she was thinking that far ahead. Although I do love, she's like, I told you I'd hold your hand. And she looks like the creature goes, what? I thought it was a cool line. Again, that made me laugh. That was a good scene.
Yeah, there's occasional bits of witty dialogue here. But I think the fact that the story itself is just so weak was really what caused me to just, I got bored. So what? Not quite the halfway point, I think, was where I just kind of started going like, okay, what are we doing here?
You know what would have been nice?
I mean, there's that...
I wanted to add something to made this better.
Again, just kind of speaking of the lack of structure here and how this is not a very tightly written movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that scene where she's called into the principal's office and then almost gets into a fist fight with the other alternative / goth chick. Like, look, it's one thing if this character shows up very briefly is like, I'm attached to the guy you like.
Right.
It's another one like, no, I'm stooging on you and insulting your dead mother. And then just the last we see of her is that. And there's nothing that.
Right.
I mean, at least you have to at least pay off the fact that she says, go look into her purse. I bet it's full of drugs. You should have looked into her purse. And then, yes, it's full of drugs. Like, there's just, you just leave so much that's just kind of unrefined and hanging here that I couldn't really get into it. It felt shoddy.
Hey, Robert.
Narratively.
Last Night in Soho, which we talked about, like, it has that really jarring, like, left turn ending where, like, a bunch of naked men are, like, trying to kill Anna Taylor-Joy and all that. And I almost think, like, this movie could have used a little bit more of that, where, like, this sort of descent, you know, like, almost like a Shaun of the Dead, not Shaun of the Dead. The second Edgar Wright.
Hot Fuzz.
Where like everybody, like almost everybody in the town now is like fucking turning on her, and
we needed the Malignant switch, right?
Yeah,
where it just goes gonzo,
right? Where he's just fucking Voorheesing everybody.
Yeah,
like, we did need some kind of suspense. We needed something. Again, you brought up the axe murder. I was waiting for it to be revealed that he was still on the loose because they say he was never caught.
Yeah,
we needed or the police or they get there's a few more close escapes from the police while they're getting more body parts. We needed to build the action a little bit more for us to be like, oh, what's gonna happen? Yeah. What's gonna happen?
Yeah. So that's it. I think if you were to like let an AI crawl through a bunch of Tumblr posts, you'd get and then went, hey, you've watched that, now make a movie that appeals to this. This is kind of what you'd get.
Okay. This movie is not that bad, okay?
No.
Wish was that bad. Wish, I'm still convinced, was written by an AI.
I think even AI would be ashamed if it made Wish. It would have just immediately self-deleted. But when I say that, like, it's not that, like, I don't mean the dialogue was written by the AI. I mean, if you were to, like, say, hey, AI, generate me a prompt for a movie that is aimed at this.
Yeah.
Well, okay, it's just goth enough. It's just alternative enough. It plays into... It will play with a horror theme, and there'll be whiny, bitchy teenagers, and a little bit of blood.
So I brought my kids to it because I bring my kids to everything, but the average parent's not bringing their kids to Lisa Frankenstein, and this appeals to a demographic that is watching TikTok and YouTube. And I think... I understand, you know, like the Focus Feature put this out, and this was Universal's attempt at, like, hey, maybe we can have like kind of like a Blair Witch kind of a thing where, like, we'll put out this really cheap movie and it'll be a giant hit. We'll make some money with it. And I almost think it would have been better off going straight to streaming and really like targeting that audience on the mediums that they digest.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah. I think this was. Maybe do a limited release so that it might qualify for an award down the line. But then, coming soon to Peacock, you know, Lisa Frankenstein, and, you know, and they plaster that all over the fucking app, you know, have them Royal Rumble, certainly Royal Rumble sponsored, not by Slim Jim, by Lisa Frankenstein. It's because they fucking threw Vince out of a window at the end of that shit.
Shut up.
Say if the only thing this movie gets known as is the first stepping stone for Zelda Williams, then I can be at peace with that.
She's kind of good. I mean, look, your first movie can't bomb though. So
that's not true, and you know it.
Well, no, here's the thing. Like, will she get more at bats? Sure. There's an argument to be made for. Let's give you a few more. Inexpensive project. Let's keep you working. But if she eventually doesn't create a hit, she might be a working director, but she's not going to be putting any like prestige projects or, you know, something.
I'm really sure mainstream. You know what, Mark? In the old world, you'd be right.
Mm-hmm.
In the new world, she's hired to do the next two MCU movies.
Please, God, no.
You know what? She'll be the first director to exhibit a movie strictly on TikTok.
I'm just telling you that a handful of those, the fact that a handful of those movie studios are now just such unabashed puppy mills about this stuff.
Yep.
That's right, where she'll wind up.
You ready to move on to the money?
Yep.
Money? All right. Here we go. Here comes the money. On a budget of $13 million, this thing has made $3.8 million. I mean, nice try. I applaud the effort.
Man, okay. Can we also just take a moment of silence for Argyle?
Yes, yeah, speaking of Argyle.
Which that wasn't exactly soft. A moment of silence, but okay.
It's like fucking end of days out there in the theaters.
And then a 64% drop in its second week. Good.
That's not good.
Oh,
all right. In the U.S. and Canada, Lisa Frankenstein was projected to gross between $4 and $6 million. From 3,100 theaters in its opening weekend. The film made 1.7 on its first day, including 700,000 from Thursday night previews. It went on to debut 3.8 million, finishing second behind Holdover Argyle. Not a good debut.
Nope.
All right. Yeah, Argyle maintained its spot at number one. Lisa Frankenstein debuted at number two. Beekeeper, 5 weeks out. The first real hit of the season. Like,
I mean,
I don't think anyone saw that coming.
By default.
Yeah. Maintaining its spot at number three. Wonka, 9 weeks out, maintaining its spot at number four. Migration, and you wanted to bring this up.
I did, because look, when we reviewed Migration, we all kind of clowned it.
Right? Yeah.
Time for us to eat crow. this thing has... Illumination had a better read on when to release this thing than a lot of us wanted to give credit for. This is not like the biggest hit of all time or anything, but on a 70-something million dollar budget, we're at like 240 now.
Yeah.
They knew to release it when there wasn't any other competition like for family films.
It's not doing Minions numbers by far or Sing numbers or anything like that, but it's, you know, it's making its money.
And again, like, just because we all kind of went, yeah, I'm not sure about this one when it released soft.
Right.
Turns out it had legs and needs to be acknowledged.
Fathom event, its second week fell from 2 to 6, The Chosen. Anyone But You opened up in a few more theaters, 8 weeks out, and that maintains spot number 7. Mean Girls is flopping hard, too. 5 weeks out, that dropped from 6 to 8. American Fiction, nominated for an Oscar, dropped from 8 to 9, and Poor Things, 9 to 10.
Poor Things is weird.
I like Poor Things a lot. Out of Darkness debuted at number 12.
Well, of course you did, but...
Of course I did. Turning Red... went straight to Disney Plus because we were doing post-pandemic stuff at the time. But it's got it finally got its theatrical release, and it debuted at number 16. Dune in IMAX. So which version of Dune is this?
It's the part one.
Okay. Yeah.
Doing that in preparation for part two coming out.
Well,
soon.
The only reason why I asked is that this weekend, because I know, because we saw the trailer for it, and my son was like, please take me to see this weirdo movie.
Oh, you're going to take him to see David Lynch's Dune?
I'm going to take both him and my daughter. And I warned my daughter tonight on the way to choir, I'm like, David Lynch will change you. You're going to be like the old man in the cartoon going, I was a man once.
Yeah, you that is a movie that is almost incomprehensible if you haven't read the book.
I remember watching someone trying to do an analysis of it, and about halfway through that you see them just going through the books. It's like, I shouldn't have to do this much homework.
Yeah. My goal is to show my kids David Lynch's Dune, have them turn to me, have them turn to their mother and go, can we just be like, what this joke would have worked if I could remember the word. When emancipated, can we just be emancipated? Like, we would do better without parents at this point. Between the weirdo fuck over here and whatever the hell it is you're doing, Ma. That's my goal. It's for them to walk out of Dune and go, we quit this family. I am now Lily X.
Is David Lynch the one who does that, or is Cronenberg the one who does that?
You know, one day I gotta show them The Fly. You know, when I really want to give them nightmares. Speaking of
your
nightmares,
daughter might not make it through The Fly.
I know, but my son's going to think it's the best movie ever.
Yes, he is. And look, Lily's not going to make it through it. She's going to hate you for about like a week and a half.
Yeah.
And then she'll get over it.
And Jeff Goldblum's going to eat his ear, and she's going to nope, and there's going to be a Lily-sized hole in the fucking wall.
Then Jonas is going to say, this is the best thing ever. And then like in 15 years, he's going to come back and go, this is where it all went wrong, Dad.
Right.
Like, we're going to pinpoint this in like multiple therapy sessions.
I'm going to be describing this scene to a therapist.
Yeah.
And it's at this point you need to start saving for the psychiatric treatments.
The next group of movies that he wants to watch is John Wick. So we got a little while before I get him through The Fly. Let's see. The Iron Claw dropped from 15 to 18. Origin, 14 to 19. And The Boy and the Heroine.
Heroin
drop from 17 to 20.
The Boy and the Heroine is the subtitle of the upcoming Kurt Cobain movie where he shoots himself in the head at the end.
Oh, you mean the one where he was murdered? Okay, cool.
Oh, the one where he shoots himself in the head. Right,
moving on.
Ace of Things debuted at 22. Perfect Days, 26. Aggro Drift, 36.
Never even heard of that.
The
Aggro Drift doesn't even have a studio listed.
Drift 49. Like,
nobody wants to take credit for this piece of shit.
That was the weekend that was. Worldwide, I want to check 2023 just a moment. Just a minute.
If you must.
I'm curious.
I don't think it's moved up.
No, Wonka still.
It's not. Because again, it's not passing Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Wait. It changed. Ant-Man and Quantumania was number 10. It's number 11 now.
Wonka.
Wonka's gone up.
We've already documented this. It's two or three weeks now. Wonka maintaining its spot at number 7 hasn't moved from between The Little Mermaid and Spider-Verse.
So yeah, and again, it's not pulling in the other $108 million it needs.
I think we can finally put 2023 to bed. All right. The year of our Lord 2024, however, The Beekeeper starring Jason Statham is at 133 worldwide. My question is, we have Madam Web coming up this weekend. Does Madam Web beat The Beekeeper in total?
No.
In total?
Yeah. Like, does Madam Web make more than 133 million?
I'm not sure there's a strong enough word that expresses no.
I mean, like, at the end of its run, Robert.
I don't care.
Yeah, it's still a no.
Okay.
So do you realize how many people are not going to? I see there is a freaking Watch Mojo page where they talk about movies that everyone already doesn't want to see. And literally, the first picture on there is a shot of one of the girls in the spider costume.
All right, so
I've been quietly advocating for us to review Bob Marley One Love instead of that.
And Robert hates black people.
That is not true. I hate reggae music.
Just kidding.
I hate music in general.
I do not hate music. Doesn't.
He likes metal. He's been on, see, if you would listen to more of our podcast, like my ex-girlfriend did, then you would know that Robert's been on a bunch of our Sabaton reviews. And he even pitched Joe Curley and the Progressive Music, or whatever the hell it was that you did, that you pitched one night. You pitched some YouTube guy that was really good.
Oh, yeah, Jonathan Young.
That's the one. That's what I said. All right, moving on.
He might have what is the chosen episodes? What is that?
What is what?
She chosen? Wants to know what The Chosen is.
What is that?
The Chosen is an ongoing, and we're in season four here. It's an ongoing season, series of, I think, 9 episodes that retells the story of, it's basically about the 12 apostles in Christ's mortal ministry.
Mean Girls at number 2 at almost 100 million. Argyle sitting at number 3. Night Swim, number 4.
Mobile We're going to have fun watching that go down the list.
Mobile Suit Gundam Seed Freedom, number 5. The aforementioned Chosen, number 6. Clex Academy at number 7. The Master and Margarita, How I Spent My Saturday Night, number 8. Golden Kamuy, and then Alienoid at number 10. ISS, which I saw, number 12. Book of Clarence, yay. Number 14. Demon Slayer, not exactly firing up the charts here. Number 16. And Lisa Frankenstein making its debut at number 20. That sitting hurts. Between El Rumi and 3391 Kilometer. All right. So this weekend, we've got Madam Web and Bob Marley duking it out.
I bet Argyle repeats.
You think so?
I would say so.
I think I said last week, I think a lot of people obviously like Bob Marley's music. A lot of, despite the racists I do the show with who don't like black people, people enjoy reggae music. I just don't think anyone cares about Bob Marley's story enough to go see this thing in pictures. So that, and then there's Madam Web, which
Madam Web might. Here's the thing, mm-hmm. Madam Web might squeak it out, mm-hmm. but okay. Here's the better question, Mark. I put the number in our group chat.
Mm-hmm.
I was the entire box office take for last weekend here in the United States was $30-something million.
Right.
The question is not what's going to be number one next weekend. It doesn't really matter. The question is, can we actually get that up to 40 million for a whole weekend of all movie theaters in the United States? Can we actually get that back to 40 million for this? I say no. Here's the other question. Are we going to get a repeat of the It's Morbin Time phenomenon with Madam Web, where nobody sees it, a weird viral social media campaign spins up out of nowhere, please re-release it, I just didn't know it was there. They re-release it and nobody sees it again.
No, I think that's kind of like Barbenheimer thing, like just a one-time thing.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I normally love watching studios like this just tumble over and fall face first, but I pray that the marketing department at Sony is not that stupid.
Okay. So
we'll save it for something related to Kraven the Hunter then. Or Kraven the Activist is
all right. The following week, the 21st? 23rd. 23rd? Yeah, the 23rd. We've got Drive Away Dolls, which I'm going to see, but it's another focus feature Another one starring women. Another one no one's going to go see except me. Lionsgate has a movie called Ordinary Angels, directed by John Gunn, starring Hilary Swank coming out. And yeah, it's a, there's not a whole lot of anything anyone's going to care about coming out the 23rd, which means that anything coming out this weekend has at least a pretty clear shot at maybe picking up some viewers if it's any good at all and people give a shit about it the second week. All signs point to March 1st. Dune is where it's at. Dune Part 2 is probably our first mega hit of 2024.
Or the closest we get to a mega hit.
And like moment, I said, smart move by the theaters to re-release the first one back, especially back on IMAX. Andre actually took a friend of his who didn't get a chance to see it.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, if you're going to watch Dune, that is one of those movies where you need the theater experience. Even
Jonas was like, can we go see Dune again? I have no idea what this fucking movie's about. And I saw it with you, but I was like, you know, 7 at the time.
And now I'm almost 9. Clearly, much has changed.
I'm sure by this point in my life, I understand what Frank Hubert was trying to write about.
Yes.
Pop quiz. Spell Quixar Haderot.
I'm
even masking the pronunciation of that.
I'm totally buying him the Dune novel for Christmas because I'm a terrible parent.
If you're going to troll him with stuff he's not ready to read, at least go with the Once and Future King.
Yeah, maybe look at him The Hobbit.
He might read The Hobbit.
I'm going to say, I feel like at 10 years old, The Hobbit's like decent reading.
Yeah.
All right. With that said, here it is, the critical review.
Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
All right. That worked right away this time. Well, once again, the critics nonplussed. The audience score, they loved it just fine. And this is the divide that this is, you know, if anything's going to cause a civil war in this country, it's not going to be Taylor Swift in a football game. It's going to be this shit right here.
Here's my thing about this. Like, the problem that you're going to run into with a decent audience score for this one is It's just really, really small, a really, really small sample size.
Criticals is the 50% rotten. The 121 reviews, when you go to Top Critics, it drops to 38. They did not
work. It's not that bad. I would not say
it's no. Hang on. I don't think this is a bad movie. I don't think I'd give it a pass on a pass fail score, though.
No, I think that's a bit harsh, but the verified audience is 82. All audience drops to 77. And the AI writes, an affectionate callback to classic horror comedies of the 80s. Lisa Frankenstein can be fun in its own right, despite not measuring up to the movies it imitates. All right.
Not wholly inaccurate.
Let's see here.
Zero. There are no anticipated movies this entire freaking month. None of them.
Wow. Of them. To the intern who chose that picture of Dakota, fucking whatever her name is, or Madam Webb. You have not done that woman a service at all. All right.
I showed you that weirdly like quasi-sexual trailer she did for this movie where she's like encouraging you to see it.
Yeah. All right. Abby Bernstein of Assignment X. Lisa Frankenstein has all the necessary elements of a cult classic. Let me tell you why this person should fuck off. Okay. So I don't like inauthenticity. I really don't. One of those things that really bothers me. It's something I've had to explain to people. Like, I don't care what your reaction to is, but be honest, be authentic. If you have a problem, if you have a problem with me, if you have a problem with anything, I would rather you just fucking, you know, I would rather you stop being mean, mom. Okay. I would rather
Robert you, and I get that joke.
I would rather you just come out and say it than give me an answer or an opinion or whatever that just feels like that's just something that you want it, you think you, you know, I want you to say or do or whatever. What I'm going with this is cult classics are one of those things where, yeah, it missed in the box office, but it went on home video, really showing my age here. It went on home video.
And went into the rental stores and found an audience.
It found an audience. And those people shared it. I didn't see Monty Python and the Holy Grail until I was in high school. And I had other friends show it to me. A lot of my friends didn't know what the Kentucky Fried movie was. I knew what it was because I was a little pervert. And I remember the Catholic high school girls in trouble scene. And so I had to tell everyone about the boobies. Like, that's how things become. Clue, which my son is demanding I show him again. Clue is one of those things where I don't think it did well in the theaters, but people watched it at home. People told other people about it, and and that's what makes a cult. That's the point.
Dude, do you want the biggest example ever of a cult movie like that?
Yeah,
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
was a horrible flop in the theaters. Horrible right. flop.
Mm-hmm. So now it's literally the definition of timeless.
So here's the thing: when you're like at the makings of a cult classic. Look, you don't know what's going to hit with a small group of people who have a loud voice and are going to tell their friends. You just don't. But when you throw out the term cult classic, I feel like, again, it demeans the authentic experience of this catching fire with a small group and then spreading. And I think that stuff is important. I got equally pissed back in the day when we started throwing around the phrase alternative music. So what the fuck does that mean? That's somebody who couldn't figure out on the radio what to call college rock, the combination of college rock and whatever noise was coming out of Seattle in the early 90s. They just didn't know. They just didn't know. And so they were like, well, it's alternative. Ugh, what a mom jeans line that was. That, like, oh, this has the making of a cult classic. Could you please stop showing the world how uncreative you are in your fucking review, you half toaster oven? Ugh. Off my soapbox.
Now that Mark has dragged poor Miss Abigail through the mud.
Fuck Abby Bernstein. That's what I say.
Let's go find some of our favorites, shall we?
I'm trying. Everyone stayed away from this movie.
They didn't see it.
Rachel Wagner of RachelReviews.net. Right. The best thing about this film is the aesthetic and enjoyable performances. Terrific.
There he is.
Oh, he did.
Kevin Carr, Fat Guy at the Movies. This story has an intriguing angle, but it lacks energy and cohesion between clever zingers.
Kevin Carr gets to live another day. We will not be taking him behind the shed for a beating.
That makes it seem like this was way too much movie for him, which is kind of a weird thing to think.
No. I think he's onto something here. Like, that was basically our complaint. Like, there's no narrative cohesion. There's no forward momentum until suddenly there's nothing but momentum and we have to wrap everything up.
Dan Merle of Dan Merle Reviews Sex Perverts. I'll never forget Screen Junkies. A lot of people showing up expecting to say, aw, may end up saying, ugh. Much more for the Heathers crowd than the Twilight crowd. I think it's a more interesting direction. All right.
You know what? I ignore the... first part, the first sentence, but second sentence, I think, was right.
In terms of, again, speaking to categorization, I think he's right. Not that I care much for Heathers either, but...
Sarah Michelle...
Is Kurt Loder still alive?
Because Sarah I Michelle have Fetters not met
of,
him.
Sarah Michelle Fetters of MovieFreak.com, top critic. I laughed throughout. Well, of course you did, my dear Sarah. And even with all the goofy, dismembered mayhem, there was an innate sweetness that captured my heart. And refuse to let it go.
Look, I can't speak to everyone's personality, but if you're laughing throughout the entirety of this, I don't have a lot to help you with.
Hey, look, somebody just got out of the tanning bed.
Oh, poor God.
Folks.
Hey, Dorian, you want to give us an update on how you're doing?
Sorry I'm late, boss.
You're okay. We're almost done here. Real quick, what'd you think of the movie?
I actually really enjoyed it. Having it be directed by Robin Williams' daughter was really fantastic to me.
Cool.
And I think it's kind of a Tim Burton-ish movie, but... Sorry, folks. Those of you watching, I got into a car accident.
Well, we're glad you're safe.
He's not wrapped up in bandages just for the hell of it, guys. I know he likes to show up in costume, but this ain't it.
Yeah, no, not this time.
Okay. You got anything else for us, Dorian? Because if not, we're going to, I think, close up shop here.
Close up shop.
Okie dokie. All right, folks, that is our review, such as it was, of Lisa Frankenstein. Next week, Madam Web. Oh, goya, oh, boya.
Not it.
Mark, you don't want to do this to me. He'll do it. He'll really do it.
Isn't anybody going to save that poor man?
Thank you for getting my reference.
Exactly what he's trying to do.
Tomorrow, we continue our look at black cinema. We are focusing on the legendary comedian Richard Pryor, one of my favorites. He's on my Mount Rushmore. We're looking at this trio of pictures, Car Wash, Brewster's Millions, and The Toy, starring Jackie Gleason, which has the line of the movie. He has the funniest line in the movie, and it's not by Richard Pryor. He's like, that's not an ashtray, you asshole. I just feel the need to tell people that constantly now. It's so good. Jackie Gleason, we miss you. That's
straight
it for
to the moon, right?
Yep. Alexis will be reviewing Has Been Hotel. So I met my girlfriend's kids over the weekend. The 10-year-old girl spent a good 10 minutes trying to convince me I should watch Has Been a Hotel and Hell of a Boss.
You should.
Okay.
You would probably enjoy them.
You love musicals. You love singing.
Okay. I don't know what any of these things are other than you've talked about them. They're very popular reviews on our network. Anyway.
But yeah, we'll be reviewing that on Valentine's Day. It's me, Jesse Starcher, and David Wright.
Yep, and I will be not around. And then Thursday, I'll be at Machine Head. Yeah, next week, Madam Web, and then we've got a triple feature of Hustle and Flow, Black Snake Moan, and The Wiz, hence our tonight's tortured opening. And then on Thursday, Pat Mullen and Ronnie Adams insisted we have fun. So they're taking over a triple feature that I'm hosting, and they decided to do movies from school. Dangerous Minds, Lean on Me, and Stand and Deliver. They used to call me Crazy Joe, now they can call me Batman. That's what I got going on. Over the weekend, last Thursday, as a matter of fact, I did a YouTube exclusive for Teofimo Lopez versus Jermaine Ortiz. Yikes, that fight. Another example of there may be some funny business in boxing scoring, just a little bit.
117-111.
Yeah. All right, Alexis, show us where you pissed from.
All right. Well, I do have one other review coming up. That is on Thursday. I will be joined by a newbie to the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network. Let me make sure I got his name right here. Mr. Diego B. Gleason will be sitting in to discuss the 5 films that are nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Oscars. And I say 5, but really we'll be talking about 4 of them because one has not gotten an American release, even on streaming, and I can't find anywhere online to watch it. That's not going to give me a massive computer virus. But we're going to be talking about that and some of the other animated films from 2023 and so on and so forth. So I am looking forward to potentially bringing in someone else to the cult.
So, very good. Serious question. Nimona or Boy and the Heron? What do you think's winning?
Boy and the Heron.
That's where I would bet, but.
And honestly, it wouldn't, as much as I adore Nimona, it wouldn't be between that and Nimona and the Boy and the Heron. It would be between Spider-Verse and the Boy and the Heron. It's a duel to the death between Studio Ghibli and Sony.
Sony loses that so easily.
No argument. And as far as the plugs that actually do pay my bills, we have Honeysuckle Rose Creations, where fashion meets fandom at the intersection of geek and chic. Makers of fine, unique, upcycled jewelry to those geeky at heart, geeky in mind. We did just restock our shops, and we did, but then I sold a handful of items, so now I need to go do another restock because I am just so busy. And we are getting ready because convention season is almost upon us. Finally, I can get back on the road and I can have interactions with other people besides you guys. So the first show of the year is here in my hometown, Kansas City. That's Planet Comic Con. Looking forward to that. We're going to have a lot of fun. I've mentioned before that we're having a Scream reunion. They are going to have Skeet Ulrich, Matthew Lillard, and Jamie Kennedy there. Neve Campbell was previously supposed to appear. She sadly had to cancel. Did just find out Ron Perlman's going to be coming. Looking forward to that. He is the coolest person ever. And we will be there with all of our wares and all of our pieces and a lot of stuff that you see here and a lot of stuff that you don't see here, because we have a ton of stuff that is convention only. And I'm looking forward to kind of pulling it out of the dust and putting it back on the tables, as it were. So yeah, we got that coming up. As always, you can find our shops not only here on Etsy, but also on Handmade at Amazon. And of course, you can always find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, fuck you, Elon Musk, I'm still not calling it X, and TikTok. It's Honeysuckle Rose Creations, where fashion meets fandom at the intersection of geek and chic.
All right, Dorian, you did come and join us here, so go ahead and plug your studio.
Frankie Pictures, where if it needs to be filmed or if it's, shot, give us a call.
Okay. Robert, go ahead and finish up.
All righty. Mark mentioned next week we will be talking about Madam Web, and we'll just see which of us survives, won't we?
We're going to come up on two pictures of one of you with a noose and the other one with a gun.
I'm taking five kids and my girlfriend who doesn't go to movies. I'm going to have a great time with this.
They're going to kill you.
They're going to be so happy they got out of the house. No one's going to care. My son, actually, no. Four out of the five children will be like, this was great. I'm happy to see moving pictures. There's my son. And my son will be in the background burning the theater down.
Could be. And I would start a show that way if it wouldn't get us in trouble on all the platforms that we stream on that would not appreciate the humor. So that'll be something. I cover mixed martial arts and professional wrestling over at 411mania.com. MLW, when they release stuff, I cover that. WWE SmackDown on Fridays, and the UFC has their first pay-per-view of 2024, UFC 298 this coming Saturday. Great fight in the headline. If you want a full preview, listen to my other podcast, the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast, where I look at the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts and adjacent combat sports as the mood strikes me. So give that a listen. And I also, again, a review of the UFC event from last weekend, which was meh. But if you want the results, listen to the podcast or read my review. Again, MMAZone of 411mania.com or the WrestlingZone of 411mania.com. That's all for me. Thanks, I'm driving.
I give you credit. That was the most adorable little meh that you've ever made.
Thank you. It's so funny that you say that's all for me. Thanks, I'm driving. I say that constantly.
Do you? I could have sworn I created that.
No. No, you did it. That was a Michael Maltese joke before either of you were born.
I got it from Daffy Duck. All right.
Yeah, Michael Maltese, the writer. Okay. He wrote that cartoon.
Speaking of Daffy Duck, be well, be safe, and behave.